Bye.
Bye.
Hello. So I guess I'll facilitate.
Yeah.
I have no problem facilitating. Great. Welcome everybody to the January 12th, the first meeting of the year for the Council HIV Community Planning Council, Council Affairs Committee. Just really quickly do some introductions and also, I don't know, just what's going on. So on my list, let's go with council members. Let's start with Irma.
Hi, Irma Parada, co-chair and council member and member of this committee. Happy New Year to everyone.
All right, and then we have Jesse.
Hi, Jesse Murphy, council member, a little bit
all right.
Zombie.
All right, Nay.
Hi, I'm Nay Nascimento, council member.
Matt.
Matt Geldmaker, council member.
Chuck.
Chuck Adams, a council member and co-chair of this committee.
Kevin.
Kevin Hutchcroft, HHS.
Thomas.
Thomas Noble, government co-chair. Chuck.
Derek.
Hi, this is Derek, member.
Fantastic. And then council staff.
Mark Molnar, council staff.
Valerie Takudo, council staff.
David Jordan, council staff.
Alina Clark, council staff.
Wow, you guys are all here. It's called council staff. Great. And then do we have quorum for this first meeting, by the way? I didn't even ask that.
Yes, we do.
Okay, great. Right. So as you see presented on your screens, review and approve the January 12th draft agenda for today. So that is going on today. So if there's any edits or alterations, let us know. If not, we'll just will approve by consensus. Great. All right. Approval by consensus. Thank you, Mark. I don't know who's in control of the show today. Next, we have the draft minutes for the last meeting that we had. When was this? I think it's November?
November.
November. So these are the meeting minutes from last time. I think they went out. Actually, they went out quite a while ago. If they're, quick second to review. If there are no edits or no alterations or any inclusions or exclusions, I'd like to also approve these by consensus. Fantastic. All right, cool. Minutes are approved by consensus just to move this meeting forward. All right, next we have announcements. So any announcements from council members first? I don't think there's any, no public comment. So any council members, any announcements? All right. Seeing as there's nobody jumping at the bit. Council staff, any announcements? Oh yeah, council staff, Mark.
A couple things. Let's see. So first of all, this is, I think, 700 season. So you should be filling that out. If you have any questions, you should be contacting Allie directly. If you do not fill out your 700 forms or do not, if you're not active that, then you have a reduction in your taxes. So I guess that's something for you to keep in mind as far as responsiveness to your duties as a member of a public commission. And then second of all, since we don't have review presentation calendar on the calendar on the agenda today, I just wanted to give you a bit of an update. So this month's meeting had the group had originally determined to have the needs assessment COLA year in review be the agenda for this month. There's been a bit of a shift after meeting with the co-chairs. So first of all, we're adding an agenda item, hopefully, depending on whether the presenter can get in at this short of notice. Kevin seems to think they will be able to. They'll be speaking to the impact of COVID on the community we serve. I forget that gentleman's name, but that's exciting news. And then second of all, we'll actually be removing the year in review, my year in review, and instead doing a small group breakout sessions where we can certainly reflect upon the year we all just had, but hopefully much more forward-looking. We'll look forward and discuss the upcoming year and goals we might have. So co-chairs thought that would be a good idea to switch that out, since honestly my year interview would be on the sparse side, perhaps even on the depressing side. And however, it is a mandated activity for me contractually, so I will still be posting my year in review presentation on the website eventually. So if you want to see a short PowerPoint, you can certainly check it out that way. And that's all I have for announcements.
All right, great. So I see that Jackson and Ken joined us. Jackson, quick intro.
Hi, oh, I thought I was on mute. Hi, I'm Jackson. I use he and him pronouns. I'm a council member. Happy New Year to everybody.
Thank you. And Ken Pierce.
Can you confirm you can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good, thank you. I'm sorry, I was sitting on the membership meeting website, Zoom site, before I figured out that I had the wrong Zoom. My name's Ken Pierce. I'm a new member of this committee, and it's good to see you, buddy. Welcome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Oh, and so we were doing announcements. Do y'all have any announcements before we move on to the next topic? Yes, sir. Ken.
I don't know if mine's announcement so much, but just a request if we have time to discuss kind of the importance, I think, of getting some clarification on vaccine for HIV and positive individuals, especially those 60 and older, and where they stand in line, because there seems to be a great deal of anxiety, I'm at least hearing anecdotally, from the lack of information and confusing information, either through the San Francisco Chronicle, the health department, whenever. And it seems like we could have some impact by putting pressure for at least some clarification of the highly, that group of people 60 and over who are long-term survivors on where they stand. Thank you.
Right. No, yeah. And one of the things that we had discussed yesterday at the co-chairs meeting was that we're altering the agenda for the full council meeting at the end of the month. And one of those is discussing actually the impact of COVID on the communities that we serve, and also opening it up for some discussion questions around, exactly vaccine and sort of what our next steps are, actually also for our functioning body moving forward post-vaccine. Like, what is it going to look like for us to be meeting? What are our objectives? What are our goals? What do we feel comfortable with specifically with the communities that we serve? And you know, do we, you know, how business is going to be done? So yeah, that has already been factored into the, it's going to be a discussion for the steering body. So the steering committee meeting is going to have a discussion about what questions we want to pose for the meeting. And then during this full council meeting, we'll have that conversation. And hopefully we'll have a presenter to help for that as well. Great. Thank you so much, Ken. All right, moving forward. No public comment present, so I'm just going to skip on to the co-chair elections.
All right. The terms are up. I can jump in from here, David, so that you can send your name out there if you'd like to be reelected. So the co-chairs change per year, and our current co-chairs are Chuck Adams and David Gonzalez. And the floor is now open for nominations for co-chairs for 2021. You can also self-nominate if you're so inclined to support this committee and your community and the council.
Is Chuck and David willing to continue with the role, or?
I'm unaware. Ask them directly.
Are you guys?
Are you willing to continue if you were so nominated?
I can.
That sounds like an enthusiastic yes. David?
I was asked to dial it down a little bit, so I'm not going to nominate myself, but if I am nominated again, I'm cool with it.
That sounds like a forthright maybe. So are there any nominations for our co-chairs given that information?
I nominate both of them.
Is there a second to those nominations? Irma is seconding them. Excellent. David and Chuck, do you accept these nominations?
Sure. Yes, sir.
All right. Those sound like very loud and sort of yes. Thank you. All those opposed to David and Chuck continuing their sterling service as co-chairs of this committee. Seeing none opposed, congratulations. Your quest continues.
Great. Thanks. Sounds amazing. Just kidding. Thank you all. This actually is a pretty easy group to facilitate, actually. The agenda is really structured. Okay, moving forward. Thank you so much. So next we have COLA presentations by Melina Clark. So this is part of the, what's on the agenda for the full council meeting, and there's going to be a few sort of like changes for that. So hopefully Melina can help us understand what we're going to be looking at the end of the month.
Thanks, David. So why don't I try sharing my screen? Okay, can everyone see my slides? Cool. So thanks, everyone. So I'm just gonna kind of quickly run through this to give you an idea of how the presentation looks. I won't go into a ton of detail, and then I would love to hear everyone's feedback on, just what feedback you have. So this year's COLA was on people who speak Portuguese as determined by the Community Engagement Committee. So I have a slide just thanking collaborating partners. While we're all here, I just want to give a big shout out to Ney for all of his help with this, from translation, coordination, just everything. Couldn't have done it without you. So thanks, Ney. Here I'll just talk about limitations on the COLA. The biggest one this year was COVID, which meant that we couldn't do an in-person focus group like we've always done, and it had to be an online survey. Next, I just go into an overview of just kind of what the COLAs are. And then next, I get into the results from this year's COLA. And so first, for quantitative data, this is the prioritization exercise that the clients filled out. And on the right, this is the weighted ranking. And basically, the exercise clients had to, there were all 17, I believe, service categories for this exercise, and they're truncated for the COLA. So it looks a little different than what you all normally see. And they have to order the each category and number of importance to them from 1 to 17. So this score that you see over here, this is the results of that. I also have this data in just another format in case it's helpful. This is just a graph showing the same data of the weighted scores. Next, for the qualitative data, I just go a little bit in here, just give you all a brief rundown of just the methodology and the incentive for the survey. And then next, I just go into the different trends that I noticed in the results. And so I won't go into super detail on this now, but I'll just give you all just a moment to read the slides. Yeah, so this one was, I saw a lot of comments just around people's mental health. And then next, another theme, and this was one that we had talked about in advance at community engagement, was stigma within the Brazilian community. And I saw a lot of, people wrote a lot about that. The next was around immigrant status. And this was another thing that we had also talked about in advance at community engagement. And this one I actually had majority of respondents say that this wasn't a huge issue for them, but I did also include information and comments from people for whom it was a challenge. So next, another theme was around language capacity. This was the other one that we talked about in advance at community engagement. And this one, again, a lot of respondents reported that a kind of a lack of services in Portuguese did not present a huge challenge for them. But people did talk more about that. And a lot of people talked about how they had proficiency in English and Spanish, and they could kind of like choose to use whichever one of those felt more comfortable for them. And last, this is just a couple other themes I noticed that didn't have an overwhelming amount of comments, but that I thought I would include. One was around, a few people talked about a need for job training and just like professional training, and just help getting jobs, and also support groups and maybe kind of social activities. And yeah, like a lot of these themes with the job training, it was hard to tell if this was a challenge related specifically to this demographic group or if it kind of had to do with COVID, or there's like a lot. And I think with the mental health too, I think we've heard through HCAP report and other sources that just the pandemic has been a really hard time for a lot of our clients in terms of mental health. So there are some things here that are kind of hard to like pinpoint to a specific place or reason. Yeah, and that's the end of my presentation. I chose to just kind of present the results as I saw them rather than get too deep into interpretation. Yeah, do you have questions? I'll stop screen sharing for now, but I can always bring it back up.
Hi, Melinda. I want to thank you for the look at your presentation. It seems very straightforward. The big question that I had, actually, you answered towards the end in regards to mental health and sort of job placement sort of stuff, and whether there was a tease out between what was happening because of COVID and impacts and what was more standard concerns in regards to community. So, I thought it looked really great, very straightforward. Thank you.
Thanks, Derek.
Any other questions or comments? Mark.
Thank you, Melina. I have a suggestion. I think it might be for you and for Dave. It's being a little bit different because we do have a couple people here on the council who work directly with the populations and also work directly either to different, I think, different degrees in supporting the projects of COLA and needs assessment, you know, namely Nay and Jack, I think. Would you want to include like maybe just a few moments at the end if Nay is comfortable and Dave, if Jack is comfortable in speaking to their work with Portuguese speaking client of the Ryan White Party Services. Does that sound like a good idea to you, Melina?
That sounds great. I would love that. Does that, how does that sound to you, Nay?
Great. Mm-hmm. I can do that.
Okay. Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. I have a couple things to say first. My last day at Shanti is going to be this Friday. So I'll be working full time for Aguilas as the outreach and volunteer coordinator. Yeah, that's one of the things I'm going to talk about. Yeah. Thank you, Melina. We've been working for a few weeks on that project. And I was very surprised to find out that like translating the inserts, I could actually feel how much the community needs mental support, like resource around mental support. We provided in Aguilas, but right now, like, it's very limited the support that we can provide because we don't have a good number of people that can provide therapy sessions in Portuguese. So I definitely think that's one of the challenges that we are facing right now. When it regards to work development, working with the community, the Latinx community in general, I do think that's not one issue that the Portuguese community faces, especially when we talk about immigrants. We are talking about a good number of people that are qualified to do, I would say, like inter and high level jobs, but when moving here, there are so many challenges with regards to the immigration process that kind of make folks feel stuck in a place that they cannot fulfill their dreams or goals because they don't have a degree or they cannot apply for a position because they don't have enough experience. And I think folks were trying to, what folks are trying to tell is that if we have well-developed programs that can support immigrants to that transition, like more career development training, would be great for the community. I think it's more like about understanding how the work environment works in the United States, and you know, make people feel confident that they can do the job. I can definitely see the language barrier being one of the factors that make people feel insecure in some cases. It's not like a big barrier, but I think it's still something that that can be improved, and maybe we can provide resources with some partners in the city to, you know, moving forward with those with the demand, like, of the community. Let me see what else I worked directly with the people that answered the survey, and I was reading the comments. I was very touched by the way they are describing their mental health during COVID. I think it was almost no exception of people saying that they have been experiencing anxiety or fear, or even like they've the uncertainties that we have on both sides, because I read some people saying that they are facing the pandemic twice. Like, we have the pandemic going on in the United States when they need to find out how they are going to survive during this time, but they also have the pandemic that's going on in their respective country, and when regards to their family and other things, I think there's a lot, this concern and fear that creates this anxiety, and in times of so many uncertainties. Yeah, congratulations, Melina. I think it looks beautiful. The presentation was very straightforward, and I was very, I feel honored and proud to be part of this project with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Nay.
Great, awesome. Any more? Okay, so I'm sure you will make adjustments then to the agenda then for the full council meeting, Mark, right? To add them onto the presentation for the COLA?
Oh, I don't think I need to add them. I think what can happen at the end of Melina's COLA and Dave Newsom is they could just simply ask if Nay wouldn't mind speaking a bit to their experience. I think that's fine. I mean, in some ways, we haven't done this before, but in other ways, we have. We've asked other people to speak to their experience if they were part of a working group. And it's nice to have a diversity of voices on during these Zoom meetings, to be honest. So,
great. Awesome. Thank you. Jackson.
Mark, maybe you and I should chat offline. I don't actually know almost anything about Dave's presentation, and I haven't actually.
Oh, no, I'm not actually speaking to you, speaking to a presentation. I'm speaking as a person like Nay, with my understanding, helped facilitate a Portuguese speaking support group, and your agency works with you. So I was suggesting was sort of additional insight from a person who is supporting that community, not necessarily an insight on the COLA or the needs assessment. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I can definitely speak to the needs of young people, and I think kind of globally in terms of the needs of HIV positive young people, but I don't, my agency doesn't work that closely with HIV positive young people. And so I just want to put that out there, I guess. But yeah, I can totally answer any questions. So yeah, my ability.
Much like answering questions, but just an additional voice, because as you all know, like 2020 was a tough year for data collection, and so these are shorter presentations than they would normally be. Both the like definitely much shorter. For example, Melina's only looking at one COLA. Dave had a much smaller sample size. So because of that, I think we have the space to have an additional voice of experience to give their perspective. So don't consider yourself, and Dave certainly, I'm not suggesting as well, like that your comments are coupled to the needs assessment. I'm not even sure how much support you're able to provide the needs assessment. It sounds like if you haven't looked at it, then you weren't necessarily engaged with it so much. But if your work is connected with youth, it would be just great to hear that voice. Does that make sense to everyone, including you, Jack, as far as what I'm trying to do here and why it's different than sort of what we've done in the past? It's just really, it's almost like a sub-agenda item. So I get why David would have asked if I would have adjusted the agenda item, because it is different than the COLA. It is different than the needs assessment. But I think we have the space to do that, especially because of the small sample sizes and the small number of COLAs that have been, let's just say because of 2020.
Perfect, thank you.
Awesome, thank you for that.
Sorry, yeah. Just quick question, just to be clear, I'm just gonna keep my presentation as it is right now, and then at the end, just leave space for Nay to offer his interpretation. Sounds good?
After you go through yours, just, I guess, invite Nay, like if Nay would like to speak to, towards the population as well, you know?
Cool. Sounds good, thank you.
Right. Awesome. All right, so next we're moving on to the needs assessment presentation by Dave Jordan. So please take that away.
Yeah, I'm gonna share my screen. One sec.
Hey, I just want to say that I actually have to leave right now because I have another meeting, but So I see you guys next, okay?
Bye, Ne.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. So as Mark mentioned, very small sample size this year. In fact, only had 6 respondents. Smallest I've had colas that were significantly bigger. In fact, our cola this year was significantly bigger. Couple pieces before we get started. Because community engagement did not meet last week, community engagement, for those of you who are unaware, are sort of functioning as the needs assessment work group these days, which has, you know, its pluses and minuses. This year, I don't know that we could have really done it otherwise, or it would have been very challenging to do it otherwise. But in any case, we did not meet because of what was happening in the Capitol last Wednesday. And so they did not get an opportunity to sort of weigh in around direction, which is something that would ordinarily happen with the work group coming up with some amount of conclusions or things like that. Though, as you'll see, I don't know, there's a lot of conclusions to draw here. It's largely what we expected to see. Also, sorry, I'm getting some feedback. Is anyone else getting that?
Yes, there's a lot of feedback.
There you go, go for it.
Can you hear me? Okay. Additionally, I still, because the community engagement committee did not meet last week, and I still had some potential respondents outstanding that had been sent surveys but had not returned them, I left the survey open for as long as possible. So I just closed it last night. And so there are some pieces that still need a tiny bit of work. Additionally, I did send out a provider follow-up questionnaire, short questionnaire that I'm hopefully will have in before full council, so that I can get those answers added in at the end, with in contrast to the consumer participant responses. The needs assessment survey tends to be a little more robust, and so it's a little bit longer slide-wise. We can fly right through this if there's anything you feel like. I did remove a number of questions which I felt like were not helpful, or the responses were not especially helpful. So if there's anything that you feel like is missing, that's likely why it's going to be. If you feel like there's anything that's unnecessary, also let me know. So all respondents between 21 and 25. So as I said, very small number. That's, I believe, 2 female, 3 male, 1 transgender female. So most were less than a year. We did have one, looks like probably was since birth, which is fairly unusual. We don't see that a lot these days, especially in somebody so young. So that is notable. Engaged in medical care, 100%. Most had seen relatively recent. I think one was within the last year. 2 not on antiretrovirals. Of those who are on antiretrovirals, the largest reason for not having taken them was that they forgot. That one that is truncated there is taken by police. So support around adherence, one filling, no, undetectable, most, yes. I believe that was five, yes, and one, don't know. Comorbidities, that the one under other is a seizure disorder. Most have been tested for STIs, one have not. These questions can be a little confusing, especially if you're asking, you know, you're not able to sort of engage with them while they're asking them. Sometimes, you know, even when we're doing these by survey, we get some people sort of following up with us, asking us to clarify the question. So it looks like of those who were tested, who tested positive, I think two access services, one who potentially tested positive, said no, and the others was not applicable because they did not test positive. I think it's likely potentially that that one that said no might have also been a potential not applicable, but hard to say at this point. Sorry, I have to move this. Informational support, that's really split 50-50, which is, you know, problematic. Primary source of income, so GA, unemployment, working, or none was the largest response, which is unfortunate. The one response under other was that they were getting money via the foster system. So those of you who don't know, foster people who are foster children get ongoing money even after they age out of, even beyond age 18. Monthly income, most more than 500, but some, you know. So it's interesting, those two answers kind of conflict with each other, but that is the nature of this type of data, and sometimes it's not always clear. This was, so largely the people that we accessed, largely the people who participated had been part of the ACAC program at Larkin. So many of them were or are or were living at the Larkin facility there on Hyde. And so this is sort of a deceptive question, though some of them had not, as were not, and were living in their own apartments or other situations. What is good is we're not seeing anyone who considers themselves homeless, which is the first time in all of the needs assessment I've done that I've seen that. Though half of them consider themselves having food insecurity, which is again problematic. Although most seem to have access to a kitchen, which is positive. So I believe this was two of the six had been incarcerated. So within the last 6 months, more than 3 years ago. All had experienced some mental health challenges. I think that that's totally what we all expected. I'd be surprised if it was anything other than that, though luckily all of them had also accessed mental health care. Half having issues with substances, less than half accessing treatment. Only one with a stigmatizing experience, which I think for youth is probably, I would guess that youth are probably having more challenges with stigmatizing experiences. That's just a gut feeling in my interaction over the years, working, having some interaction with youth. So that's positive. Support systems largely made up of service providers and friends. no support groups there. Usually support groups are a bigger one. Again, trusted sources of information, largely support group. This is the prioritization. I know those are really small. I'm going to have to, this is the way the information is exported. It's just exported directly in this sort of randomized ranking that they're given, as opposed to the priority. So you can see what the priorities were: mental health, primary health, food, emergency financial assistance. We're up there. Those are pretty consistent with what we see across the board. I will be exporting this into Excel and rejigger this whole thing so that it is a little more readable. So that's not what the final presentation is going to look like. Additionally, I'll be adding in a little more sort of explanation around limitations, total number of participants, when and where we access those participants, and so forth, as well as some of the sort of boilerplate material around the community engagement work group. And I'll probably also pull a slide or two from EPI around just sort of context. The last bits are the qualitative questions that we asked. This is sort of quality of life. Largely what we'd expect. I don't think that there was anything that really jumped out at us. I think that it's positive that none of these individuals feel like they are struggling in the extreme. Clearly, there's some references to COVID there as well. I'll give you just a minute or a moment to finish digesting this, and I'll move on. So this is a question around, did they feel like their specific needs were being accessed? Now, remember, I think we really have to interpret this more similar to the way we look at a COLA, because they were all from one site. A lot of their answers are going to be similar and have a similar perspective. When asking these questions, I think a lot of them, their primary service provider here is ACAC, which is in a lot of ways kind of a one-stop shop for a lot of services for these youth. So when talking about this, they're mostly considering ACAC and Larkin, not the sort of larger continuum of care. So of course, a service provider that is specific to youth is going to have be addressing specific youth challenges, with the one exception being there at the bottom. And that just, I think, speaks for itself. This is sort of a general, again, sort of referencing ACAC specific issues. Lack of services, food and finance. And again, we look at that sort of, and we know that people in transition, whether it is transition from incarceration, from hospitalization, seniors in, transitioning from sort of or into seniorhood, and youth are always going to struggle. And the largest struggle for a lot of these particular youth are aging out of Larkin programming. And that's real. And I think that we all know that this is something that is a challenge, and we are constantly looking for ways to support. And none of us should be surprised that this is called out, in my opinion. That's it, I believe.
All right. Any questions, comments, presentation? Any tips for the full council meeting and how we can frame this?
Dave, the presentation was really, really great. I was only going to say the same. You already addressed it about like the size of the slide and how it reads. But the only other thing I would add is that youth who are in transitional living programs, I mean, really anybody in a transitional living program, including those who are staying at ACAC, are considered homeless, even though they don't consider themselves homeless. So it might be something to just sort of mention that these youth are experiencing homelessness, but that they are engaged in transitional living programs as kind of like a stopgap.
Yeah. I mean, not all of the youth that respond, if you looked at sort of living situation, some of them were living, had their own apartments. I think there was one other, and that was a person who had, was actually renting an apartment. Some were living in SROs. I think a couple were actually still at ACAC. One, I was very unclear as their answer seemed sort of, maybe they didn't understand the question fully, but I do agree that that is sort of a version of homelessness. But we always sort of walk the line between sort of how we define things and how participants define them for themselves. And I try and sort of show both sides, but I agree. Yes, that is also an example of homelessness.
I think it'll depend also where how those young people got connected to those SROs, but ACAC does both sort of like on-site housing and scattered site housing. And so they might be living in an SRO and feel like, I'm totally independent, I have my own place, but it's actually being provided to them through that. So I think you're totally right. Like what is the client perspective and then what is the system perspective? I think for the council to just know that from a systems perspective, the system considers these young people to be homeless, I think is important in terms of sort of like, what are the longer term conversations around like what supports these young people might need as they age out of youth services.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Anyone like to feed into that?
I have a question, comment sort of thing to David. Thanks for the presentation. Look at the presentation. I'm wondering, given the small number of participants, is what you were seeing in your data, was any of that considerably different from what you would normally see when you've done a look at youth from your previous work or?
So regularly, whenever it is applicable, so last year we did 50 plus, we of course did not interview any youth, but at any other time when we've done substance use and needs assessments, homelessness, mental health, all of those that are a little more universal to the human experience. We do include youth. And largely those youth end up coming from Larkin because Larkin ACAC is really the sort of the place where you can reasonably be expected to get access to HIV positive youth who are stable and engaged enough to actually be able to participate in a thing like this. I think that's one of the challenges with youth is that there are more youth out there that we couldn't access who are HIV positive, but because of the sort of nature of youth and the instability inherent in that, especially transitional age youth, it's a very hard population. I'm sure I'm not telling any of you anything you don't know. So as far as the youth we've engaged with before, this is very consistent for what we've seen. A lot of their concerns are very similar. I do think that my main sort of, the way I'm sort of perceiving this needs assessment, and in some ways I feel like maybe we should frame it as such, is almost as a COLA, because COLAs are often site specific. Or service provider specific, which essentially this was. I would have preferred it not be, but because of the nature of how of our limitations and our collaborators in this, it does really feel much more like a COLA than anything. And those two modes bring us different results and should be interpreted differently. I think that anecdotal information from such a small sample size is really, it's a hard sell to sort of get, you know, come up with sort of recommendations, large scale sort of system-wide recommendations around funding, even for smaller amounts from carry forward. I just don't think that that we should be looking at it in that way. And so, you know, my intention is to sort of not suggest that, you know, this looks like what we've done in the past. I know that I'm giving you more of an answer than you asked for, but sort of one sort of carried into the next for me there. Short answer is yes.
You know, and I think, thank you for bringing that up, Dave, because I think that's the question that I have then is then, you know, in terms of our deliverables and things that we're sort of like supposed to be doing with our funding. I think Mark, you mentioned this during the co-chair meeting, but I think we're still able to report these as sort of delivered with a little asterisk to be, yeah, this is what we got during COVID, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. HRSA has been very open about the challenges that all EMAs and TGAs are facing.
Also, you know, as you know, that sort of community engagement requirement from HRSA is open to a certain amount of interpretation, and generally we over-deliver relative to a lot of other jurisdictions. So I don't think that there's any sort of concern necessarily that we are going to be sort of dinged for that, given everything that's going on. In fact, we probably delivered more than a lot of other jurisdictions just doing the COLA that we did and this, honestly. So that's not a concern. But I am frustrated that this is sort of, that this is going to be sort of an asterisk on my record, and this is going to live on the website forever as, you know, a product that I put out that is not up to the standard I would generally would hold us to, but it is what it is.
I would also just want to say that, like, this is totally a COVID thing in some ways, but also this is a little bit how this looks. I mean, Dave and I have engaged with each other about doing this in previous years and have come up with basically the exact same problem, which is that the youth services are limited to really essentially one provider, that there are young people who are positive who aren't engaged with service providers, but they're not engaged through this network, so they're difficult to find. So I just want to put it out there that, like, Dave's working with something very, very challenging, and I think did absolutely the best that could be done with, like, the availability of the information and the and what is available, not just for COVID, but, like, in general. I think this might be, like, as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. Thank you. Yeah, you know, you still won the World Series, Dodgers. Don't worry about it. You worked hard for it. All right. Thank you so much, Dave. That was actually really, really good. So hopefully we can move forward with that this coming year as well. Anything else before we jump on to basically ending the meeting? I think that's it, right, Mark? Nothing else? All right, great. All right, thank you all for the first Council Affairs meeting of the year. Next meeting will be February 9th. And then also just a reminder, the steering body meeting is going to be, what day is that? Oh, God.
Day after next, I think.
Week after next, right?
Thursday after next, yeah. And also it looks like Canada.
January 21st. So, yeah, so we'll see you all. So that's open to you all also as well. January 21st.
Like, Ken has raised his hand.
Oh, hey, Ken.
Hey, just a request, and I was having trouble getting on today, so it may be my problem. But were any of the materials we saw today sent out in advance? I have some vision issues, and it would be really helpful for me to be able to view stuff as we go along them with a paper copy that I print out. It, is that possible for future meetings, whether it's this meeting or other meetings?
Yeah, I mean, this meeting is constantly an issue with that because oftentimes presenters are still putting their presentations together up until the last moment before this meeting starts. This will be available before full council for sure, the finalized product. But like I said, I closed the survey on this last night and have been working on it all, you know, finishing touches until probably an hour ago.
So even if it's sent out an hour ago, I can check before the meetings. It's just that it's impossible for me to follow along with the size and some vision problems. Just a request. If it can't be done, it can't be done.
Okay. We can make an effort.
Yeah, we can definitely make an effort on the other presenter side too. But as Dave said, it is a challenge. Obviously, a lot of times presenters are working on their presentation literally right up until the point they join the meeting. And that's even certainly pre Zoom era of just that's how many people work, I suppose. But when it is available, I will definitely do my best to make sure that's sent out to you first, Ken, so that you can print it out. And it's totally understandable that you want that as a hard copy. It's just this committee almost more than any other is really beholden to what the presenters or what the guests are able to actually do in the moment.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all for attending. I guess we'll see you all.
Kevin Hutchcroft, can you stay on after the meeting for just a moment? Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay, great. Thank you all. I got to get going because they're already knocking on my door too. I got another meeting. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
Hey, Kevin, I just want to mention that in case you didn't know, I don't know if you know this from where you're seated. I sent you a chat. I don't know if you saw the chat. So we can see everything that you're watching on your screen in the picture behind you. So I just wanted to give you a heads up. I certainly didn't see anything inappropriate. It looks like mainly news programs. But I would want someone to tell me if that was happening behind me. So I'm just doing you a solid in case you decide to.
You know, these days I just feel like I need to run the news just to find out what's burning now.
My news is, it seems like, on 24/7. Fortunately for me, it's in a different room. But yep. That's what the kids call doom scrolling, the TV version, right? Or literally just looking at the next new and anticipating the next new bit of bad fucking news.
There's a meme on Facebook now saying, you know, breaking news. Oh, what the fuck now?
Exactly. All righty.
No, but thank you.
Okay.
I think I just sent you maybe once, maybe twice, Dr. Zabowski, I think his name is.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'll probably send him an email either this evening or tomorrow morning, see if we can get him on for the last Monday of this month. Thank you.
Perfect. Good and deal.
Everyone you requested.
And thank you.
Oh, bye.
Bye.